Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. I'm Susie Collick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 23 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. I'm going to dive right in, and in this episode, talk about the importance of hope and hopelessness in self-defense. And I'm just going to say, before I go on, trigger warning, if you're listening, I'm going to speak very graphically about a couple of the things that I experienced in the attack that I survived. But before I go on, if you're interested in taking a Pretty Deadly course, but we're not in your area yet, you can always download the Basics of Self-Defense Movement, which is a one-hour pre-recorded workshop that you can follow along with some easy movements focused on centering and balance, or the Beginner's Guide to Self-Defense, which is a five-session online self-defense class using stuff around the house. Visit our shop at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com/shop, and you'll find them there. So back to our episode. Hope. So what is hope, actually, and why is it important in self-defense? I'm going to put it to you this way. Last night, I took a self-defense class, not from a Pretty Deadly certified trainer, but from someone who's offering self-defense. They're offering self-defense in a slightly more gentle way than maybe like a really aggressive Krav Maga class or something like that. So I wanted to try it out and see what it was like. Now, just for full disclosure, the trainer did know who I am. They knew that I teach self-defense. They knew that I'm also a martial artist, although I come from a different discipline. So they were full aware. I wasn't, you know, doing any kind of ninja thing and trying to spy on them, but I wanted to see what their style was. And also, to be really honest with you, I haven't trained with a bunch of people on mats in quite a while. It's usually just one-on-one, so I was also just looking forward to that. Anyway, this self-defense class. The trainer is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, very sweet, really loves his art, and is quite committed to teaching the people that he was teaching. The class was full of women, most of whom were there for the first time, a couple of whom were repeat customers. And the attacks that we focused on were variations on one attack. So the attack, interestingly enough, was not too different from the one that I survived. The defender is on the ground. The attacker is standing over her, advancing, and leans in with an attack to the face or punches to the face or maybe to choke. If you're in Brazilian jiu-jitsu or kung fu, the initial defense was to basically shrimp, to continue to move back and get out of the attacker's way. But as the attacker bends down, the defense was to actually reach up with your legs, wrap around the waist to pull the attacker in. As the attacker goes to choke, you either come up from underneath the forearms and brush them away, or if the attacker is punching the defender's face, you block an arm and basically isolate the main arm that's doing the attack, whether if the person is like right-handed or left-handed, pin it, lock your hands underneath your own knee, which again, it creates a pin on the shoulder. And then from there, we went into a choke with the goal of choking the attacker out so that they would pass out and we would safely be able to get away. So again, just variations on an attack, whether you're the person on the ground defending or you've managed to turn the situation around and now you are the person on top straddling the attacker. In essence. And again, as with pretty much everything with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the goal is always to choke the person out until they pass out. So this was fun to play around with. I had a training partner who had come to a few classes. She's quite committed, so it was fun to work with someone who had a more advanced skill level than some of the women who were trying the class for the first time. It always feels good to roll around on the mats. It always feels good to work with people, and it's always wonderful to try out different people's teaching styles, different arts, different approaches to a lot of different things. But we were there to learn self-defense. And a few things came up that I sort of, how do I say this? I didn't respond to because I wanted to respect the trainer's space and his territory and his sort of teaching ground and him as the authority in that class. But a few things that internally I disagreed with. As I said in our last episode, the reason that I started Pretty Deadly is because I felt that traditional self-defense classes as taught by men are what men imagine our realities to be as opposed to what they actually are. So this was a pretty good example of that. In the attack that I survived, so I was not on my back shrimping away, but there was a point where I was crawling on my belly to get away from the attacker. He was on his feet. He grabbed me, stopped me, was able to stop me, turn me over, and then was going to proceed to continue to beat my face, which he had already been doing when I was knocked to the ground. And I just want to say as well, and this is an uncomfortable thing to share, and it's maybe an uncomfortable thing to hear, but the attack that I survived happened during a heat wave in Los Angeles. So that night, I was sleeping naked. That means that when I was defending myself throughout this attack, I was completely naked. The attacker was also naked, although I don't think it's because of the heat wave. I don't really know, I've said this before, I don't really know what that guy originally came there to do, but I do know that when I interrupted him in the hallway of my house between the bedroom and the bathroom, that whatever he originally came to do turned into trying to kill me. And that intention from the attacker was extremely, extremely clear. There was no doubt in my mind. But to go back, so the guy had gotten me to the ground. I fell against the door frame. He had grabbed hold of my hair really close to the scalp, which is a defense that we actually train. And I see other self-defense trainers train this as well. He was holding my head by my hair and repeatedly punching my face. He punched me so hard at one point that it whipped my head around and actually tore my hair out, which helped me free myself from his grip. And that's when I was suddenly crawling towards the kitchen with the idea in my head of getting a knife to defend myself, which I'm very glad I didn't, because I didn't know how to use knives then to defend myself. But anyway, that was the logic. As I was crawling on my belly to get away, he grabbed a hold of me, stopped me from advancing, flipped me over, and was standing over me, bending over, about to continue to pound my face. And that's actually the point at which he stopped, because he must have heard the neighbors or something. All of a sudden, he stood up straight, jumped over my head, and ran out the door. That's the end of that story. But what I want to focus on is when he flipped me over and was about to start pounding my face again, I had no self-defense or martial arts training at that time, but the idea of reaching up with my legs and pulling him into me, I'm not so sure that that's how I would have responded. I mean, I had already been under attack, basically, for a few minutes at that point. And I have no idea how long that actually went on for, but it had been going on for a few minutes. I just wanted to get away. That's all I wanted. I wanted to get away. I wanted him to go away. That was it. So even the logic of going to the kitchen to try and find a knife to defend myself, it wasn't so much to defend myself as it was to chase him away. And I think, again, this is something that people don't realize. You know, this is how our logic is working in these situations. So the idea of reaching up with my legs and wrapping them around his waist, which I don't even know if I could have done in that position because my body was being controlled already by him, to pull him closer to me so that I could choke him out would seem, one, very counterintuitive, but also my survival system was in control of all of my movements. Your survival system wants to get away from threat and danger. It doesn't want to pull it closer. And again, yes, that can be part of self-defense training and martial arts training over years and years and years. But for the average person, I don't think that that's something that is likely to come out of them. The idea of choking someone to the point where they pass out would mean that I would have to commit myself, especially in the techniques that we were learning, I would have to commit myself to wrapping myself around their body or holding them really close to me on my body while I waited for them to pass out from my choke. I was naked. The man was naked. The last thing I wanted was that person's body up against mine. That's not to say that everybody has that same exact experience. Oftentimes people are clothed during attacks. But nonetheless, to have someone who's trying to hurt you pressed up against your body with your body wrapped around them until they pass out, again, is really, really counterintuitive to our own self-defense systems when we're trying to escape. So I was a little curious about this as to why this would seem like a good idea. And to be, again, full disclosure, I didn't ask the trainer why he felt this was a good idea. I just wanted to train. I didn't want to challenge him. I really just wanted to be a participant in the class. As we continued, the class proceeded to the idea of if you've managed to turn the situation around and now you're on top of the attacker and you're the one straddling him. Now, again, you want to get your arm around his neck, put on a brace, and of course, choke him out again, which was not that easy, to be honest with you. Legs get in the way. I found it rather complicated. I could do it once I sort of figured it out, but I just thought this is seems like a lot of extra unnecessary steps to me. And also, I just don't want to rely on somebody passing out. I've never put a choke on someone long enough to actually have them pass out. I don't know how long that takes. I know it's possible. I know the techniques to do it. We do it in ninjutsu as well. We do a variation. So in the class that I was taking, the women that I was training with, or the woman I was training with, seemed to believe that the choke actually was to crush the Adam's apple, which will physically choke you like you're choking on food, but that won't necessarily pass you out. You need to cut off at the jugular on the side of the neck, not the front of the neck. They didn't know that. They were doing what they felt, I guess, from the trainer. But also, yeah, I don't really know how long that takes. And I don't know if I'm willing to commit to hugging someone that tight for as long as it takes, or if I have the strength to. And again, you know, we do want to remind ourselves that in real life situations, we're full of adrenaline, so we're a lot stronger. We're going to be moving faster. Time stretches and compresses and all kinds of things. So time and how long I want to do that and do I have the strength are in some ways not really relevant questions. But it does raise the question, well, I'm training, and that affects the training. Once we trained that a few times, we also learned a variation, which he chose not to teach us, but me and the woman that I was training with decided to try it out anyway. And in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I guess it's called kamakura, if I remember that correctly. So it's taking the arm, so the defender, basically, because now you become the attacker, the defender has turned on their side, so you're straddling them, they've turned to one side of their body, you take the arm, you put it in a lock, and then you start to turn your body around the arm to lock it up into the shoulder. So the way that it was being shown to us was to turn the body, or to turn the arm sort of around the body, and the defender's body is turning with it. So you've got full body weight behind it. And that would be, I guess, counterclockwise if the head is number 12 on a clock. We have something very similar to this in ninjutsu, which I can't remember the name of because I'm generally terrible with all the names of our techniques. The difference is that we turn clockwise. It's a lot faster. You don't have to keep turning and turning and turning, especially if you have someone who's super flexible in their shoulders, until you find that lock. Because when you turn clockwise, it locks up immediately. That's what I did, a kind of by mistake. But full disclosure, it wasn't totally by mistake. It was a little bit on purpose. I couldn't understand why I would want to keep turning and turning and turning until I find that lock when I could just go the opposite way and get it immediately. That's just a question about Brazilian jiu-jitsu versus ninjutsu versus body dynamics. What was more interesting to me is that one of the women, while this technique was being demonstrated, one of the women said, but if I've already choked the person, out, then why do I need to do this? And the trainer said, well, this is in case you don't choke them out. Fair enough. But I found it really interesting that one of the women had asked the question, because I think, again, that this is something that a lot of trainers, in the way that self-defense is traditionally taught, a lot of trainers don't realize that women do not want to hang around and pound somebody's face in to make sure that they're not going to get up and follow us, right? Or to teach them a lesson or whatever it is. So the idea is basically, so if I've choked somebody to the point where they've passed out, why do I want to hang around and do something else? And if I haven't been able to choke them long enough to pass out, or I find myself in a situation where the easiest thing to go for is an arm and put it in a lock, what am I going to do then? So that was the issue too, is that that lock was very, could be very interesting, but then what do you do if you've locked somebody's arm up? I mean, how do you get out of that situation? You're sort of stuck with them. Maybe you can dislocate the shoulder, but nonetheless, they can still get up on their feet. They've still got one good arm. So I don't know. Again, I had a little bit of a problem with that. And again, it's that question of hope and hopelessness. The third thing that happened, and this is the one that speaks most to hopelessness, is while he was teaching us these defenses of now the defender being on top, he said, as he was talking about what he was doing and why he was doing it, he said, you know, unless you're a professional grappler or professional wrestler, you're not going to be able to do this. And he was referring to a technique that he said was actually much easier, but you have to be a professional in order to do it. So he was going to show some alternatives, the ones that we learned. Again, I don't think that he meant to be discouraging. I don't think that he meant this in any harmful or dismissive way. And I think he probably wasn't really even thinking about the fact that his words may have any kind of impact on the women that were taking self-defense from him. But to hear someone in an authority position say, especially in self-defense, to hear that person say, unless you're a professional, you can't do this one version, so I'm going to show you something else. You're already telling people that you're not as capable as someone who's a professional. You're already cutting off hope. After the class, a woman was thanking the instructor for his training. Like with every single martial art, he said, yeah, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is the best for self-defense, especially for women. Please, everybody thinks their martial art is the best because we are all very loyal to the art that we practice. It speaks to something deep inside of us. Please stop telling people it's the best or it's the only real or whatever it is. It's complete nonsense. And it only feeds hopelessness. Back to this woman who was thanking the instructor at the end of the class, and he said, yeah, this is the best self-defense for women. And he said, but it's not the only thing, because if you've got someone a lot stronger, you need strength too. So, you know, include strength training. And again, this raises the question of hopelessness. I don't know anything about this woman or her health levels or whatever, but maybe she can't do strength training. I don't know. Maybe that's not possible for her. Maybe she doesn't have the means to go to the gym. Maybe she has really severe osteoporosis. Maybe she has MS. You know, whatever. I don't know. Who knows? But to tell people that you have to have strength training, you have to train over and over and over again in order to get the muscle memory of this stuff, in order to be really, really effective, you have to be a professional. But since you're not a professional, we'll give you something else that's frankly more complicated. To always look for the same result, which in this case is to get somebody to pass out. All of these things are kind of laying a groundwork of hopelessness. And the reason that I find this to be an important thing to consider when we're teaching self-defense, hope and hopelessness, it undermines the confidence of the people that you're working with, but it also undermines the industry itself. I've spoken before in earlier episodes about how most people think self-defense is bullshit. They're not 100% wrong, by the way. There is a lot of bullshit out there, or bullshito, as someone said on a TikTok recently. We all know that as martial artists and self-defense instructors and fitness pros, and we all know that there's a lot of bullshit out there. The purpose of Pretty Deadly is to provide an antidote to that bullshit, is to provide things that are real and reliable and easy to remember and not complicated and not undermining all of our teaching with a sense of hopelessness. I've said in the courses that I've taught and the workshops that I've given time and time again that it's really all about options. That's all hope is. When we have options, we have hope. When we have no options, we're hopeless, or the situation is hopeless. There's no way out, and then we give up. There's no motivation, and there's no confidence. I really encourage trainers to never tell people that you have to be a professional, you have to have strength training, you have to train over and over and over again, that you, and frankly, I discourage trainers from telling their clients that they have to do anything. Self-defense isn't necessarily punching, kicking, locking, choking people out, even running away, even freezing and staying still. It can look like telling jokes. It can look like hypnotizing someone with a really good story. It can look like distraction. It can look like positioning yourself in a room or around a piece of equipment that provides defense for you. It doesn't always look like a physical move. And I think it's really important that if you're teaching self-defense and you're doing it because you actually want to support your community, you actually want to empower people with these basic tools for their safety, then please keep in mind that hope is the absolute most important tool in our self-defense toolkit that anyone can ever have. You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our certification programs are open for enrollment, and you can find them on our website at prettydeadlypro.com. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission by the artists.